What's up, Johnny?
All right, man.
Where do you go, babe?
You can take out the mask, Doug. The case fatality rate's like 0.1 to 0.3, according to
USC. Is it really? That's reassuring.
USC.
Everybody here's been vaccinated anyway.
USC and LA County Public Health came out with a study. They found that there are 7,000 cases in California, but they really believe that there are anywhere from 221,000 to 442,000 people who were infected.
Really?
Yeah.
So that makes it 0.1 to 0.3. Okay. Is a study to give out, right?
Yeah, just give it to that. So it suggests the case fatality is 10.
Wow.
Which puts you right in line with the flu.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it is.
So it was a hoax.
I don't think it was a hoax.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. October 21st, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. We have a lot to get into, and it's quite freeing in a way to be able to just, you know, play videos exactly like that that at one point would get you censored. Even though it's technically still playing on YouTube right now, which I really can't believe, but thank you for joining us today, Censorship Edition. For those that are still curious about why that's happening, I'm not sure why YouTube hasn't picked up on it yet. I have no access to my backup channel on YouTube at all. That's why there's no image for the video, but I'm able to update the title and information and stream connect to it from Restream.io. So I'm wondering why I have almost 10,000 views on my last show on YouTube, which is just fantastic. Not because I care about YouTube, but because the people that are lost in that sphere deserve to see the truth. And then I know that they don't want that getting out. And so I think it's just fantastic. But we have a good amount of stuff to get into today. And I want to just start off by shouting out the fact that there's a lot of, first of all, a lot of people have reached out and shown just an unbelievable amount of support for what's going on right now. But I'm not the only person that's being censored. There's a lot happening right now. I believe No More News just had both of their channels deleted. And at the end of the day, no matter what you think about any of the people being censored, myself included, it should not matter because this should never be allowed, period. But we're going to talk today about the flu vaccine and how it is shown to increase the risk of other infections and coronaviruses in general. Shh, that no-no topic you're not supposed to discuss on YouTube. And how there's more information now we're finding that shows, yes, there's more studies and more information that confirms the same thing. And you're still not supposed to talk about it, apparently. Now, this is a Pentagon study, as well as new things that Derek Brose recently sent me. We're going to talk about, the AstraZeneca vaccine and how somebody just died in the trial. And the weird kind of confusing and I think intentionally deceptive discussion of, oh, no, it was just a placebo he took. And how in some mainstream media, you can even find them claiming it's a saline placebo. But guess what? It's not. And we're going to get into that and show you on their website why they're in fact giving the placebo is another vaccine. Given it's not the COVID-19, they're telling us that they're testing, it's another version, but it's not a saline placebo as far as I can tell. And yet the question should be whether or not that's even the case. Maybe they died from that. And because there's also mainstream claiming that they did actually get the vaccine. And that's why, and that's the person that died got the COVID-19 vaccine. So there's all this stuff up in the air right now. And then remember that they're telling you that you're not allowed to question the efficacy of this thing that has been yet to be proven to be safe and effective. Isn't that ridiculous? And then censoring people like us for daring to question the thing that's literally the definition of questionable. It's fantastic. We're going to talk about masks. We're going to talk about a few other things in regard to experts questioning the narrative. Just stay with us to the end. We got a lot to talk about today. I might try to include some foreign policy stuff. Oh, and I'm glad I remembered that because I do have a video from Robert Inlakesh in regard to Palestinian prisoners, political prisoners, that I will maybe be streaming tonight after this. If not, it'll be tomorrow. And it will be streamed to make sure that it gets to all the locations. But let's get started. I want to start off with giving a shout out to Whitney Webb and her podcast. I was recently on her podcast, and there we go. And this is the link here. It'll be included in the show notes when we're done. All that stuff is still the same, by the way, for those that We can just do this really quickly, so I might as well just take the moment to show you guys. Those that may be new, finding us from different locations, this is the place you should be going. You should be subscribing to The Last American Vagabond. As you can see, this is the video I'm doing right now. Now, the links aren't there yet. I add them after the show. But this is how you will not miss a show I'm doing. Right? This is all that you have a link here to Whitney Webb's series, to Broz's series, to Foreign Policy with Robert Inlecash. It's all right here. So here's where you should go, as well as subscribe, and then go down to podcast, subscribe there as well. This is the way you'll make sure you're not missing any of our content. Very important. Now, this was a really interesting conversation I had with Whitney Webb, and really, to be honest, about her research and her investigation, which I'm doing as well. I'm investigating parts of this and all that, but the discussion point, like the thing that everybody, I think, is really noticing is her outstanding research on the reality behind Operation Warp Speed. And I actually, by the way, have another very important article in the Exposed Warp Speed series we're doing that's coming out from Derek that might be maybe tonight, probably tomorrow, all coming your way. I recommend you check this out. Of course, you have to sign up for Rockfin to be able to hear this. It's a premium, but it's worth your time. I hope you'll take the time to support Whitney's Rockfin channel, and as well as her Unlimited Hangout website, as of course, The Last American Vagabond as well, and listen to these amazing conversations about things that you literally, I mean, pretty much literally are not hearing anywhere else. I shouldn't say pretty much literally, that's not accurate, but I don't see anybody else talking about this Operation Warp Speed topic. You know why? Because YouTube said, no, not allowed, because we'll censor you if you do that. But I do want to give a shout out to Children's Health Defense for having the courage to also share these things. Given it's on their own website, but they have been, Kennedy as well as the outlet have been outspoken about the truth, outspoken about, you know, standing up for what they're, you know, technically not supposed to be saying, according to the leading experts. It's incredible. But this is one that was posted on TLAV by Whitney Webb. And, you know, as always, thank you for them for giving, you know, making sure that people know that it came from The Last American Vagabond. It's a very important article. And this is the one we keep mentioning, that Google is officially part of Operation Warp Speed. Google's YouTube is now censoring discussions of the vaccines that they're working with. That's not called a conflict of interest or anything. Why? Because they're the good guys, right? Good guys don't have to play by the rules. Does that sound right to anybody? Well, that's what we're being told today. Might is right, right? That's the way of the world we're in. But to start off, I really just want to make it clear that there is no actual accountability taking place here. In any sense, the censorship is off the rails. And now, because I think people like Jimmy Dore and Abby Martin and Caitlin Johnstone all got 2,000 retweets on their shares of my censorship, they meekly come in and have to make a comment. Right, remember, this is while YouTube has yet to even email me about the censorship. They haven't given me an email that said, hey, here's a process for you. Here's an appeal link. So they have to meekly kind of just crawl in quietly underneath one of these comments and say, oh, we're sorry to hear about the trouble. The trouble that you mean your deletion of my entire channel? That's just quite a bot we're dealing with here. It says, if you think it was terminated by mistake, fill out this form to send to our appeal. You mean that the appeal that you're supposed to send to me when this happens? Like, it just shows you that they have to do this when they feel enough attention is being given to something like this. I don't care about YouTube. If they want to reinstate my channel, then they can do that. But I'm already 10 miles down the road. This is the beginning of something new, and YouTube is done. They are behind us. And I mean us as The Last American Vagabond, but I really believe right now in general. I really do. But realize that this is how they respond. Once the review is completed, you'll be notified via email with the results. Thank you. I just love Whitney Webb chiming in. I love it. But it's really ridiculous. And here's what I said about it. Simply, I just added, are you serious? Don't meekly come into the comments acting like you want to resolve anything. Not even an email was sent before you removed a decade of work. That's not how an honest party operates. How about this? If you think this was done in error, you email me. How about that, YouTube? That's where it's going to leave. I doubt anything will happen, but just recognize how even YouTube is feeling it right now. And I don't mean just because of what's happening to me. I mean because there's clearly something happening that my censorship was one small part of. And people are done with this. So join the team. #boycottYouTube. We're done. I also want to point out that it's across the board. And just to be clear, by the way, when I say that, like, for instance, there's still a lot of things in the process of changing. As like, you can notice all of the blank videos from playlists and things on the website. Like, there's a lot. It's going to take time to get this stuff integrated and changed forward. But just understand that we are on that path. And I will always continue to try to get my content on YouTube so people can see it. Because that's important. We want to be there for those people that are still lost. That's what this is all about. But the direction is going away from where they are. Now, I also want to point out that I had to include an embed for yesterday's show. And the only one I could find that had an embed for the website was Facebook. But guess what? It won't work. Oh, of course. And isn't that classic how that happened? I've had 14 people tell me this wasn't playing. I tried 3 times before we started. And now, of course, when I go live, it plays. But anyway, the point is that Facebook, as well as everybody else, is continuing to censor and attack anything. Anything. And of course, even somebody's asking about backed up vids, perfect timing, because here they are. Everything we have, the entire catalog from YouTube is on Library. LBRY.com.tv, excuse me. And this is where you can check this stuff out. All of it, still here. That's not connected to YouTube. Now, this is the kind of stuff that I think really pissed him off at the end. More experts speak out about COVID-19 and the efficacy of masks, which, of course, is why I made it sort of the same title today. But this is where you'll find it all. So make sure you guys can share all this work that you can. I mean, and right now, as far as I'm concerned, this stuff, you guys feel free to post this stuff anywhere. This work needs to get out. People need to see what's going on. Now, I also have the Rockfin video here. I just want you guys to see that we have all these different platforms up and running. Here's the show from yesterday on Rockfin, which I still am getting in the works of being able to stream there all simultaneously. Here's BitChute from yesterday. Here's 3Speak from yesterday. Here is Brighteon. As kind of freezing up, give me a second. The platform's freezing for some odd reason. Loves to happen to me. But here is Brighteon. Here is one you probably don't even know about called UGETube. There's a video on there. Here is brand new tube, which, by the way, just finally started working for me. That's great. You know, must have just been a glitch of some kind, but now my videos are being allowed to upload, so rock and roll. Here is Rumble as well. All of these are out there. All of them are viable things to challenge YouTube, but I argue that there's more things that are coming in the near future that will be just a hell of a lot better. But so many things out there challenging this, and I hope you guys realize that. Time to move forward, right? A lot going on. But let's start off today with the discussion of the vaccine, the flu vaccine, and its discussion of whether or not it increases the risk of infections, which would include COVID-19. Now, this is an interesting discussion that was sent to me by Derek Brose. And this is actually from 2010. I briefly mentioned this, I believe, last night on Be Rich's on After Hours Live. Now, this is from April 6, 2010. Association between the 2008-2009 seasonal influenza vaccine. Taking a drink. Now, and pandemic H1N1 illness during spring, summer 2009. Now, the point is just simply showing you, and I hope you'll read this in its entirety like I did. But to get to the main point, first of all, their conclusions prior receipt of this specific vaccine they're talking about, 2008-2009, was associated with increased risk of medically attended H1N1 illness during the spring-summer 2009 in Canada, period. Just in case that was lost on people, let me repeat that. Prior receipt of that vaccine was associated with increased risk of medically attended flu, period. But I thought that was fake news, guys. Wasn't that fake news? Didn't I literally have a video censored for that? Yes, I did. For saying exactly what it says right there. Now, I didn't say in that video that this is 100% true. I said, this study found, here's what the study says. That's it. And you know I do that every single time. I don't say this is the case. I say, this is what this expert found. Here's what the experts had to say. Here's what they said about that topic. And then that's not allowable because they argue I'm trying to misinform people with facts. Cool. Good times. Just once again, to reiterate the bottom, the conclusion, it says, in summary, we report findings from our epidemiologic studies in Canada showing that prior receipt, again, of that vaccine was associated with increased risk of medically attended H1N1 illness during the spring-summer 2009. It says, bias cannot be ruled out in observational studies, and therefore, these findings cannot be considered conclusive, which, of course, is exactly the thing that they never say when they're discussing observational studies about masks, about anything else. I don't mean the study, I mean the people that discuss them, right? But see, because we're honest with you, we will read that, even though that in itself is a little bit deceiving for some people, because realize that the only thing they're saying is because this was not a random controlled trial, there's that caveat. That's the only thing that means. But people will jump on that to try to make it seem like this is inconclusive, but then tell you that this observational study about masks sells everything. Oh, it's all right there, right? Picking, choosing how they view things and when. The point is, it's an observational study. So we're being honest in telling you that. But this is in conjunction with the other Pentagon study. But it goes on to say, if these observations do reflect a real biological effect, which other studies have found, they raise important questions that warrant further scientific investigation, which pretty much did not happen. 2010, but 2020, 10 years later, they do another study. Right when this is happening. Isn't that interesting? So they tell, hey, we should make more studies about this because this seems like there's something going on here. And they wait 10 years right when COVID starts to make that happen. I don't know about you, but that seems a little bit odd to me, a little bit suspicious. But whatever, we'll just pretend that means nothing. But then say, okay, another study in January 2020 by the Pentagon funded finds the exact same thing. It says, first of all, the purpose is receiving influenza vaccination may increase the risk of other respiratory viruses, which is called virus interference. Then it says, vaccine-derived virus interference was significantly associated with coronavirus and human metapneumovirus. This is exactly the point. That's just the general category of coronaviruses. That's not, because remember, arguably, here's what's interesting. This happened while we were discussing COVID-19, but it wasn't necessarily COVID-19 yet. Right in the beginning, when China didn't let us know, you know, that whole BS story. So nonetheless, they still found the same thing, that it has this connection. So we have a study from 2010 that found that there's obviously a connection between increased risk in infections, primarily in this case, H1N1, and then specifically more to the case, coronaviruses and human metapneumovirus, specifically when you take this flu vaccine. And they found it upwards of 36% could increase in the risk. Now, again, I'm not saying this is an absolute guarantee that this is what this vaccine or these vaccines or that the flu vaccine would do with COVID-19. I don't know that as a matter of fact. All I'm saying is here's two studies that found that the flu vaccine, in fact, did increase the risk of other coronaviruses. That's a fact. It says it right there. And I'm not trying to misrepresent that as something else. You see, what's funny is this is what I talk about when I say that I'm obnoxiously bending over backwards to make sure that you see that but they censor it anyway. So I just have to make it like a big glare, obvious siren of censorship when you can see how clearly I'm doing my due diligence and how clearly I'm sourcing the material and I'm standing. Maintaining journalistic standards, seemingly like nobody in the mainstream media. It really is incredible. But this is why I'm going to keep going, no matter what, because this is important and needs to be out there. So again, the point is that this is the case. But this does not 100% mean that this increases COVID-19. Even though it does talk about coronaviruses, even though it does talk about infections in general, you still have to leave that possibility that it might not relate. But the fact that they attack this as fake news and pretend like there's nothing here shows you that this is something they don't want you talking about, right? Because there's no honest discussion being had about this very real topic. At the very least, if it increases the risk of coronaviruses before this started, shouldn't we ask whether or not it might be happening now or might be able to happen with where we're dealing with as they're pushing the flu vaccine before this started and again now? Isn't that something we should be able to ask? Yes, it is. Because we're not talking about some fringe conspiracy website. We're talking about a Pentagon-funded study. We're talking about legitimate official studies that found this exact same thing. And how in the world, when did that become off limits? Because it comes to a conclusion that they just don't like right now because of COVID-19. It's staggering to me. Now, here is another example, by the way. So this is what we're going to talk about. But this is what you get when you try to load it today. This was up yesterday, by the way. Interesting how yet another example showing you exactly what we're about to get into is suddenly not there. But let's check again. Maybe now it'll be back up because that seems to be happening today. It might be. Maybe it looks like it's loading. In any case, it was down all day. Pretty sure it's still down now. Yep, still down. So odd how these things that seem to bolster the point of exactly what they're calling fake news just suddenly keep disappearing. Now realize, guys, these are legitimate studies on the same websites we're talking about as other studies that they point out. Here's what it says. on January 10th, 2020, and they're referencing the study we showed you about the same thing. That's this study right here, January 2020. They published this study examining seasonal influenza vaccination, and that was associated with increased odds of becoming infected with a respiratory virus. Now, think about that even more so, because I didn't say that clear enough. Coronaviruses, infections, but specifically infections of respiratory viruses. Are we going to pretend like COVID-19 is not exactly that, and why that would suddenly not fit into this discussion? There's no logical reason that makes sense. They just say, well, this is before, so you just don't count it, except they would if it came to their conclusion. And it says other than influenza, because, I mean, we're talking about influenza shot, and it says a phenomenon called virus interference. And it goes on to say there were two viruses that showed significantly increased odds, endemic coronavirus and metapneumovirus. Coronavirus results in this study represented the four epidemic regularly circulating strains of coronavirus, right? So this is before. But then, again, when you go on to say that and then infections and respiratory viruses, that would include the broad category. But as it says here, results of this study, oh, hold on, I've got my screen. Results from this study do not support, they say, after saying this, do not support the anti-vaccination viewpoint of avoiding seasonal influenza vaccination, and in fact should be interpreted in the opposite manner. This is what we're always talking about. So this is a person who's, this is a letter, but it's on a scientific website that instead of stating facts are inserting their personal opinion, which is just obviously unprofessional. They're saying this study, which found that this increases the risk of what we're talking about, doesn't support the anti-vax? Why did that even come into the discussion? We're literally talking about facts here. We're talking about how this thing can increase this risk. And they just got to insert some political talking point about nobody even said anti. We're talking about the idea that this one thing may be dangerous. That doesn't mean you inherently think every other thing is possibly bad, but that's what they want you to associate it with. That is intellectually dishonest. And the viewpoint of avoiding seasonal influenza. So you're actually arguing that don't consider that you might not want to take this, despite the fact that we literally just told you it can increase the risk of other things because we don't want to support anti-vax narratives. This is incredibly alarming to where we are today. Now I'm going to go over this last part. Seasonal influenza vaccination and heightened risk of coronavirus. And this is all part of the same discussion, same documents. And so they're literally starting off by saying, no, get it anyway, because we're not anti-vax. And this is what they go on to say. During this ongoing severe acute respiratory illness, coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, few speculative reports on significant association of influenza vaccines with an increased risk of coronavirus infection appeared both in media and academic circles. The speculation of vaccines paradoxically increased the risk of infections possibly originated first following 2009 influenza pandemic when four Canadian studies. Now, these are some of the things that James Corbett pulled up that I just don't have up right now. But that's when it gets into, regardless of your discussion of COVID-19 versus coronaviruses, it just simply talks about an increased risk of infection, which then we're seeing with the mask applies to everything. Your increased risk of infection causes things like bacterial pneumonia. Right, which has the same symptoms of what we're dealing with here today. But I mean, there's all these discussions here, but the point is, all these studies came to this conclusion that it increases the risk, and we're pretending, aggressively defending, in fact, the opposite of that, with really nothing beside the fact that we don't want to be anti-vax, because that's logical, right? Suggested that the recipient of seasonal influenza vaccine increased the risk of laboratory-confirmed pandemic influenza. It says, the part I have highlighted, this led to 5 additional studies on top of the 4, each of which substantiated these initial findings. Now, remember how this person started the article. Yeah, but get it anyway, though, even though we have all of this evidence that all came to the same conclusion, because I don't want to be anti-vax. It says one proposed mechanism behind this phenomenon is original antigenic sin, which was first used to describe how first exposure to influenza virus shapes the outcome of subsequent exposures to antigenetically related strains. When the individual is infected by an evolved strain with the new dominant antigen slightly different from the original strain against which the person has been vaccinated, the immune system produces antibodies against the original strain through performed high affinity memory B cells that inhibit activation of naive B cells, resulting in a weak immune response against the new dominant strain. Hence, the risk of infection paradoxically increased in vaccinated individuals as compared to unvaccinated individuals. What are we talking about here? How is it possible that we can be talking about this in the same document that started off by saying this does not support what they name anti-vaccination, which is really just like being concerned about what this could cause? Jeez, this is the paradoxical problem we have in science today, where these people know that they have to get money from the people that aren't scientists and don't have, have political agendas to increase their careers. Right, essentially, science in this country has been hamstringed by political agendas. People with money and powerful, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. They know that right now. So they have to get money from the people who are in control of that. Right, that's how these people work. You don't get published, you don't get funding, you're not a scientist. That shouldn't be how this works, because then you allow the lever of control to be in the hands of people that don't care about the truth, don't care about what's safe for you, just care about their agenda. But let's continue, because just clearly coming to the literal opposite conclusion of what you just said in the beginning, I guess that's not enough. It says, besides, viruses are known to interfere with the circulation of other viruses. Again, this is stuff that, like, this is common stuff. And yet they are so aggressively trying to argue that that's not possible while they push you get the flu vaccine that they just told you could make this worse. It says there is evidence that the circulation of coronavirus in the community interferes with decreases the spread of seasonal and pandemic influenza viruses. Well, you know what? I'm just, for the sake of brevity here, I hope you'll read through more of this, because there's multiple points where they basically reiterate the same concept, that this is the case. It does increase the risk. 9 studies found that this increases the risk of respiratory viruses and infections. One of those is a category of coronaviruses. But you see, this is the kind of stuff that gets you deleted off of YouTube, because they don't care about the truth. They don't care about the reality, right? I mean, it suddenly jumps into my mind. I'm wearing the shirt that says making justice personal. I found this at a thrift store. Just felt perfect for today, right? It is personal. It's because these people are cowards and they're afraid to do what's right because of whatever reason. Fill in the blank. Still makes them cowards. And they just will not allow you to see this information. Or just ask yourself how that's possibly okay. Now, of course, bringing this into the current, while they're censoring people like me for daring to point out the obvious, the verifiable, we're at a point now where people are in fact dying from the trials that are happening about these vaccines. Now, the point here is that this is already being spread and muddied down, watered down. I mean, the point is, first of all, it was somebody died from COVID-19 vaccine trial. And it says a volunteer in the clinical trial of the COVID-19 vaccine developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University has died. The regulator said testing of the vaccine would continue after the volunteer's death. Like, there's not even like a follow-up sentence on that. It just goes on to say it provided no further details, citing medical confidentiality of those involved. Sure, so it just killed somebody, and we're going to do it. We're going to keep going, though, for your safety, right? I should love how it boils down to, we're going to rush this out in a very, very unsafe way for your safety. Does that even make sense? It doesn't when you really think about it. But of course, then it very, very quickly changed. First of all, here's what I tweeted out. Now realize how absurd it is that YouTube and many other platforms is not allowing you to question the safety or efficacy of this vaccine that has yet to be proven safe or effective. And that narrative control is for your safety? Sure. But here's the point. It immediately switched to, well, it was a placebo though. Right? Because normally saline solution kills people, right? It says, so now they're claiming the man who died received a placebo, not the vaccine. But I really don't think I buy that story. To be clear, as I said there, that's my opinion. But it really does not sound right to me. But as you keep going in the story, you'll begin to see why there's something strange going on here. They're stressing only given the placebo. I mean, it seems like every outlet in mainstream now is rushing to get that point out. No, it was only the placebo though. Without including the fact that apparently it's not actually a saline placebo, which is what they know people think when they hear placebo. Water, sugar pills, right? Except that's apparently not what's happening. Deceased AstraZeneca trial volunteer didn't receive vaccine. Again, they're everywhere. Instantly rushing out to get this story out. Can you? Do we really want to pretend like all these people have done their due diligence and spoken with people and researched it? No. They just do what they're told. They pump this stuff out because that's what they're supposed to do. Now, it says a participant who died during the AstraZeneca trial in Brazil for COVID-19 hadn't received the company's vaccine, according to a person familiar with the matter. Oh, but they're not going to tell you who that is because privacy and whatever, except that they don't care about your privacy in any other circumstance except when they're keeping information secret from you. Please notice that. But it says AstraZeneca said it can't comment on individual cases because of confidentiality and clinical trial rules. The clinical trial of the vaccine in the U.S. has been on hold for more than a month. Studies were halted globally in September when a UK participant became ill. We remember that. But they resumed, as we told you then, in the UK and Brazil and South Africa and India. And here we are, right? So they've had the signs of people getting sick and problems, and they just kept going anyway, and now someone's died. And now they're racing, I feel, to claim that this wasn't exactly the vaccine. Now here, first of all, is what's interesting. Here is something from the National Library of Medicine that is straight up saying it's a saline placebo. It's saying straight, saying very clearly that the discussion is between the vaccine and a saline placebo. It says it three times. You can see it right there. This is in regard to that specific AstraZeneca vaccine, okay? Which, by the way, doesn't mean that something couldn't have changed, but this is August. August is when this is being discussed. But here, oh, and then here's one more example, by the way. Here's just something from October, more recent, and this is from statnews.com, and it says also he doesn't know if he got the actual vaccine or a saline placebo. So even the mainstream media, more than just them, by the way, are actually saying that they have a saline placebo as the opposite of the vaccine, which I want you to remember when we get into these other discussions, because it's pretty clear that that is not the case. So it's just another example on top of the point we're making here of the mainstream media not caring to do their due diligence. They don't even care because they know what they're supposed to be talking about. And this happens so constantly. So if they're able to get something so simple wrong, ask yourself if that's just a mistake and they all made it together, or if there's something tricky and fishy going on here where they want you to think that that's the case. And maybe now after the fact, more so. But here's where it gets interesting. Oxford COVID-19 vaccine begins human trial stage, right? We're talking about the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, okay? Now this says right here, the MenACY vaccine is being used as a active control vaccine in this study to help us understand participants' response to CHAD, I'm just going to say the COVID-19 treatment. The reason for using this vaccine, this one, I believe. Yeah, okay, so it says right here. So that's what they're calling the new vaccine. So make sure they weren't referring to the other thing. And I'm just going to call it the COVID-19 vaccine for someone to repeat that train of numbers. So it says the reason for using this vaccine, rather than a saline control, okay, this is very clear, is because we expect to see some minor side effects from the COVID vaccine, such as a sore arm, headache, fever, which, by the way, we've already seen almost entirely. It says saline does not cause any of the side effects, right? It says if participants were to receive only this vaccine or the saline control and went on to develop side effects, well, they would be aware that they had received the vaccine. What does that even mean? What does it matter if that person in the midst of it ends up realizing that? I don't know. That just seems ridiculous to me. Maybe there's a reason for it. But at the end of the day, what they're trying to tell you is, well, because we know people will have bad reactions to this vaccine, that we need to use something else that might also cause bad reactions. That's actually what they're saying. I personally don't even understand why that makes sense. It says it is critical for the study that participants remain blinded to whether or not they've received the vaccine, as if they knew, this could affect their health behavior in the community following vaccination and may lead to a bias in the results of the study. But what does it do? What's the difference of what they think? It's about the reactions of their body. It's about how it affects them, how it hurts them, or whether it works, right? And so after it's been delivered, what does it matter then? I mean, I just find that to be incredible. Regardless of the reasoning, let's make sure we're aware that it says that it's not a saline control. Here's another example. This is from European Parliament. And thanks, by the way, to all the people on Twitter that were sending this out and discussing this. right? I mean, open source investigation is where it's all at today. These are parliamentary questions. It says the commission has pledged to purchase 300 million doses of the one we were just looking at, CHADOXI, or one, produced by AstraZeneca. It says, however, it appears that the clinical trials conducted by AstraZeneca to ascertain the side effects of the vaccine do not comply with the standard protocol followed by pharmaceutical companies to verify the efficacy and safety of the medical products. Did you hear about that on the news? I didn't hear about that. Don't you think that would be a massive, gigantic thing to report? You see, they don't care to report anything that may cause you to have vaccine hesitancy, which means they straight up lie to you to make sure that you're not scared about something that they don't want you to be scared about. It's for your best interest, though. Just like the vaccine, they're doing something that's incredibly dangerous and dishonest and unsafe for your safety, because that makes sense. But it goes on to say, instead of using a control group of test subjects injected with a saline solution as a placebo, the AstraZeneca clinical trials use injections of the meningitis vaccine Nimarex from Pfizer. Isn't that great? So not only are they making these separately, but different, basically AstraZeneca is purchasing vaccines from Pfizer to use in their study as a control arm. So even in their placebos and their trials, they're profiting from different groups. I mean, this is just obscene. It's obscene. That's ignoring for the fact, for the moment, the idea that they're literally giving you another vaccine in this when you're being told it's a placebo. I find that to be sick, personally. It says, and then they go on to ask, on what grounds does AstraZeneca operate differently from other laboratories, and why does it use a meningitis vaccine for its control group? So now that we have that established, let's go back and ask ourselves why we have mainstream outlets and different individuals or even just studies coming out and claiming the exact opposite. Because it is the case. It's a question we should be asking ourselves. More so because of the mainstream media. You go out right now and you search for specifically saline, placebo, AstraZeneca. I promise you will find endless articles making the casual reference to a saline placebo because they either didn't care to do their journalistic due diligence or they're lying to you. Pretty simple. Well, speaking of this, since we know that this is what they're now using for a control arm, you know, because they know that it'll give you negative side effects, so they want to make sure that the other one also gives you negative side effects. Like, is that, that's the most illogical. I mean, it's logical in the sense that that makes sense, but we're making sure that you have a bad way of it. I mean, that's just incredible to me. But here's the vaccine that they're referencing and the side effects of it. And let's say, in some cases, people who experience mild to severe reactions after being vaccinated, according to the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which we're going to look at in a minute because people still pretend that's not real, there have been 47 claims filed for injuries and deaths following that vaccine as of September 1st, 2015, including 2 deaths and 45 serious injuries. So now we can realize, oh, maybe it was the placebo that they gave and they died anyway. Nonetheless, I would argue that AstraZeneca, even if that's the case, is criminally liable for this, especially as we see that they're not even doing it the way that they should. And even the EU is going, wait a minute, why do you feel you can just completely go off the rails? Oh, that's right, because we're all in danger of COVID-19. Nobody is doing anything they're supposed to anymore because there's no accountability. It's incredible. But let's take a quick peek at the moderate to severe. Look at this, joint pain. Guillain-Barré syndrome. Where did we just reference that? Gosh, I wish I would. That's crazy. I'm usually good at pulling those things back up. Somebody want to remind me, we were just referencing the Guillain-Barré syndrome on some discussion. I know that's relevant. Shoot. Well, if somebody remembers that, email me, because it's probably a huge connection that I'm missing right now. But that's just something that remembered that popped up somewhere and we referenced it on a Wikipedia page that had to do with something that was being administered, but I can't remember. Anyway, brain inflammation, convulsions, facial palsy, which I believe is like, I don't want to guess at it, but I believe I know what that is. Allergic reaction and death, of course. Death. Cerebral palsy. That's the thing I was thinking of, but I believe that, I don't know if that's connected or not, but anyway, I'm not even sure if that's correct, but serious side effects. They're possible. Doesn't mean all the time. But so now we're talking about something that they're giving you and both are potentially catastrophically bad. Now, here's the here's CNN. A week after COVID-19 vaccine trials go on pause, Johnson & Johnson FDA won't reveal critical details. Now, first, I want you to realize that that's their headline. This is their headline as they go on to discuss how somebody just died. Think about that. So you're telling, you talk about burying the lead. Yeah, this is the headline. Well, a person just died from that trial that you're referencing. These people are gross. Like, it makes my skin crawl how obviously these people are deceptive and manipulative. But here's what it says. Dr. Paul Offit, a member of the FDA advisory committee that will review the vaccine, said Johnson & Johnson should answer these basic questions. Right? And he goes on to make a lot of points, but my point here is this. He says, it's unclear if Johnson & Johnson has learned since Wednesday, or no, that's the article, whether the participant received the vaccine or placebo. And of course, you won't find anywhere in here that they make sure to tell you that it's not a saline solution, but it says, Offit said, and this is incredible to me. Remember, this is FDA advisory committee, official capacity. He says it's clear to him that the participant received the vaccine. Otherwise, the trial wouldn't have been put on hold and stayed on hold for a week. He says, quote, why would you pause a trial if the person received a placebo? It just doesn't make sense. This is according to the director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. That's a big deal, guys. The fact that they would lie about that they would argue that it wasn't always the placebo, and then also get caught in a lie when you realize that it's not a saline solution when they hope that's what you thought. Nothing about this is honest. Everything about this is deceptive and almost sinister to a degree. And I mean, I think this whole thing is wildly sinister, but I'm talking about just this specific point. And it goes on to say, I find it hard to believe that they have hundreds of investigators in this trial that will have, and this is wrong, and I'll show you why, 60,000 participants, this huge steamship moving forward, and you stop because a participant who received the placebo got sick, just defies logic. Yeah, so does every other part of this, and that's what we need to begin to see. But so now we're at a point where it's still up in the air whether they even got it. But either way, I argue these people are culpable, and we're finding out that this is crazy, off the rails, dangerous, and dishonest. But that being said, because I hope that's wildly clear, that we should be in every possible way afraid, scared, hesitant of this vaccine, because of all the reasons that we see. And no, that doesn't mean I'm talking about every possible vaccine ever. I have plenty of opinions about it, but I'm just simply not saying that right now. We're talking about that one, or rather the 5 or 6 of them that they're experimentally rushing out for your safety, that we should be willing, wait a minute, I am very hesitant about the safety of this thing, and I have a right to say no to that. But of course, they're literally calling it vaccine hesitancy, which is why I'm saying that, and saying that that is the justification to lie to you about everything going on because we don't want to scare you. Crazy. I'm sure we'll follow up on this. I'm sure there'll be more to the story. But coming back to the 60,000 participants, I know a lot of you already know what I'm getting at here. We just talked about this again in the last show. And here was why I wanted to talk about this, because they're all, and okay, same point. If we have mainstream media calling it a placebo and referencing saline solutions while it's not, again, either they're just bad at their job or they're lying. Well, here's the same exact point. 60,000 participants, huh? Jump ahead to right here. There's another example of it right there, but I might as well just play it real quick since we're here.
Ashton and Doc 2 trial stopped in phase 3. You don't want to hear it, but it's not uncommon.
No, it's not, TJ. And according to vaccine researchers, it does happen, though not often. I think we have to remember that when you're enrolling 30 to 60,000 volunteers, it would almost be unusual if you didn't.
Okay, and here we are again. Guys, this is October 17th, you realize. Right? October 17th, that's what she's saying. Now, do you think that's because she's just uninformed? Or is it because she's trying to deceive you? Realize that this is an article that we just went over. We literally just talked about this. COVID-19 vaccine protocols revealed that trials are designed to succeed. And of course, the point being, as it says, the pharmaceutical companies intended to do trials ranging from what she said, 30 to 60,000. But The first surprise found upon a closer reading of the protocols reveals that each study intends to complete interim and primary analyses at most includes 164 participants. And this is being justified because, well, we're all in danger and we have to rush this very dangerous thing out for your safety, right? Because that totally makes sense. But we're talking about the idea that they're arguing still, I mean, literally, here's the CNN from, this is today, I believe. Yep, the 19th, so very recent, and here's one from October 17th, both of which are arguing that there are 30 or 60,000 participants. Even though Forbes just said this on September, at the end of September, all right around the same time frame, that that's simply not true. So are they bad at their job? Are they not caring to research? Or do they know that it's their job to keep you feeling like this is safe and effective, and they're doing all the right things, and not using other vaccines for placebos, and using under 100 people to find out if something is safe and something that should be using 60,000? Right? That seems like exactly what an actual news organization would be telling you, because that's a story. That's news. But you see, they're not news organizations. They're propagandists. So that's why they don't tell you these things. But it goes on. And for those that saw it, I'm sorry about the repetition, but this is important. It says very clearly for Moderna, the initial interim analysis will be based on the results of infection of only 53 people. That's the interim. Right, not the primary. We'll get to it. But it says the judgment reached in interim analysis is dependent upon the difference in the number of people with symptoms. Now it says Moderna's success margin is for 13 or less of those 53 people to develop symptoms compared to 40 or more in the control group. 13 people. That's it. With a certain level of symptoms, and they can claim that's a success when they're arguing right now that it's up to at least 60,000 people. They're lying to you. And you're first of all, so this is right in Forbes. They know this is there, or they should if they're even remotely doing what they say they're doing by researching the information and being a journalist. Think about how incredible that is. It says for Johnson & Johnson, their interim analysis includes 77 vaccine recipients. That's it. Still on interim, by the way. Their success for that interim, 18 people or less. AstraZeneca, the one we're talking about now, interim includes 50 vaccine recipients. That's it. With a success margin of 12 or less. 12 or less, and you're good to go. Pfizer is even smaller in its success requirements. Their initial group includes 32 vaccine recipients with a success margin of 7 or less developing symptoms, and you can claim that's a success. This should make you outraged. The primary analysis, now we're on to primary, not interim, but primary, right? Because maybe people out there may be thinking, oh, that's just the interim, Ryan. It's going to be more. Well, here we are. Primary analysis is a bit more expanded, but needs to be less efficacious for success. So even less efficacious than only 7 or less people. But it says about 70% is what they need. That's it. AstraZeneca, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer have primary analyses that distribute that vaccine to only 151, 154, and 64, respectively. So basically, Moderna, 100, Johnson & Johnson, 151, Pfizer, 154, and AstraZeneca, 164, I believe. Or maybe I mixed up the organization there, but that's what they mean by respectively. They're listing them all in a row, right? So 100 people. That's the primary analysis. As long as it's 100 people with 70%, you're good. Which would have been 60,000 people if done correctly, or more. It says these companies state they do not intend to stop the trials after primary analyses, but there's every chance they intend to pursue, which I promise you they will, an emergency use authorization, and then just focus on manufacturing after it's approved. Now, it says the second surprise from these protocols is how mild the requirements are for contracting COVID-19 symptoms. So within only 7 people that need to be 7 or less under 7 or less that don't have symptoms, on top of that, even the requirements for those symptoms are incredibly sparse. And this is a joke of a trial, which is the point again. As they're saying, on Forbes, it's designed to succeed. Not a safety trial is not designed to succeed. Never. Because that wouldn't be a safety trial. And I don't think this is either. Now, it says a careful reading reveals that the minimum qualifications for a case of COVID-19, guess what? Positive PCR test. You know that test that even the New York Times said has upwards of a 90% false positive rate? Cool. I'm glad that that's our entire resting entirely at the linchpin of this whole thing, right? And one or two mild symptoms. That could be literally half this country. And we know that's happening right now. False positives. It says, of course, we should know that this is far from adequate. It says the vaccine trials are testing to prevent common cold symptoms. Is that what you want? Is that what people out there think is going to save them? The reality being that we don't even need something to save us, and this is probably not this is like the last thing that we should be trying, but it says, finally, it says, these trials certainly do not give assurance that the vaccine will protect from the serious consequences of COVID-19. Johnson & Johnson is the only trial that requires the inclusion of a severe COVID-19 case, or severe COVID-19 cases, at least five for the 75 participants. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is your safety trial. As this lady lies and tells you it's 60,000, as CNN literally lies and writes down that it's 60,000, they know that's not true. Or they're bad at their job, probably both. But this is where we are, guys. Oh, and by the way, don't worry, because Moncef Salawi said it's all going to start again next week anyway. Cool. That's today, right? This is not before. This is after we have somebody die and they go, yeah, we're going to start again next week, just like they did the last time. But it's all for your safety, though. Just keep telling yourself that. Now, let's finish this little section off by talking about the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. You know, that thing that a lot of people pretend is simply not real. And, you know, honestly, partially in that regard, it's probably my fault to a degree because I call it the vaccine court because I blank on the name. And that's what this is. But this is a real thing. Now, I want to read you first this page. And then we'll go over to the Wikipedia page and see what they have to say about it. But of course, the very first line is vaccines save lives by preventing disease. Like, so not here's what this court is and here's what it does and here's the facts about it. Nope. They assert their opinion right off the bat. Not, they don't go on to back it up by verification of the source material. And I'm not even trying to say that I think it's regardless of what you think about it. They're inserting their opinion without source material and without backing it up. That's not what this is supposed to be like. Right? Especially on a government website that's simply just about a court and the and how it works and how to submit things. This is a place where people go when they have had injuries because of vaccines, because their child died, or because they've got some issue that they believe is associated with the vaccine. They come into the website and the first thing they're told is, well, this saves lives. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a slap in the face. Why would you put that on this website? Because they're constantly trying to convince you of what their reality is. Now, it says, how does it work? The National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program is a no-fault alternative, they claim, to the traditional legal system for resolving vaccine injury petitions. But that's a complete lie, because you don't have the option to go somewhere else. There's no alternative. You're forced into this. You know why? Because the vaccine companies have been given liability, because they're removed from liability because of what I'm about to say next. And that then when you do win this, which is wildly hard, I've heard it's almost impossible, you pay for it. The American taxpayer pays for it. Do you think that incentivizes companies to be more safe? What, I mean, that's just a stupid question. It says it was created in the 1980s after lawsuits against vaccine companies and healthcare providers threatened to cause vaccine shortages and reduce U.S. vaccination rates. That is what it's really about. So people are suing because their children are being injured and they give them liability? Yeah, that's literally what happened. Now, of course, what they're arguing is that there's frivolous lawsuits and attacks and blah, blah, blah. I mean, of course, some of them could have been. But we know for sure that that's not all of them. And because they threaten to have shortages of the thing that are hurting people, that these parents are saying, right? Can't have the shortage of the thing that we might have to look into, right? It's clear that they were already invested. They were already clearly on this agenda. Can't let vaccination rates go down. So we have to, instead of investigating and making sure that there's not something going on, we'll just give them liability and march forward and attack anybody that comes out the other side. Incredible. But here's what it says right here. National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program on Wikipedia. It says, popularly known as Vaccine Court. These claims against vaccine manufacturers cannot normally be filed in state or federal courts. But wait a minute, didn't they just tell me that I had an alternative? Well, I guess they're just lying to you. But it says, but instead must be heard in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims sitting without a jury. Right. So you have a special court without a jury. Does that sound right? Does it sound like a representative government? Does it sound like due process? Not at all. It's a special scenario set up to protect vaccine companies. It says the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program was established in the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which I recommend you all look into, passed by the United States Congress in response to a threat to the vaccine supply due to the 1980 scare over the DDP vaccine, which, by the way, hurt a lot of people. Despite the belief of most public health officials that claims of side effects were unfounded, large jury awards had been given to some plaintiffs. Most DDP vaccine makers have ceased production, and officials feared the loss of herd immunity. All right, so let me make sure that's clear. They're telling you, even Wikipedia, despite what the health officials are saying, they paid a bunch of people out. So if it was fake news and you were worried about vaccine rates, why did you pay everybody to be quiet about it? That's on the record. And then, of course, a lot of these makers stopped making it too, because it's dangerous, because what they were doing was unsafe. And that's clearly what was going on here. This is just one example. But instead of going, okay, wait a minute, it's unsafe, they give them liability and then pay everybody hush money. Incredible. But this is what I want people to understand. As of October 2019... which, by the way, I find it odd that it just kind of stops right there, but it says $4.2 billion, billion with a B, has been awarded. So if $4.2 billion in compensation for people who were injured by vaccines has been paid out, how can you possibly defend the argument that vaccines don't hurt people? I'm not arguing it's everybody. I'm not even arguing it's 50%. I don't know, because they won't give you honest answers. But you cannot defend, you cannot say that's not true, because I'm staring at $4.2 billion paid out for literal vaccine injuries. Period. So you realize how incredibly convoluted this whole thing is when we're not even allowed to discuss these things? Now, it says self-representation is permitted, although the NVICP also pays attorney's fees out of the fund. So they pay, your tax dollars pay for the attorneys of people who are injured. So nobody is paying except the taxpayer. And of course, then they use their lawyers to defend you. Is that what anybody would want? So you can't even bring in your own lawyer. You can either represent yourself or use one of theirs, separate from any compensation given to the petitioners, what they use for paying those lawyers. This is to ensure that vaccine claimants have readily available competent bar to prosecute their claims. Oh, of course it is. Or it's to control the flow of information and control all kinds of things. This is literally unconstitutional. I hope we realize that. Now, of course, it's conspiratorial to argue that they might have people involved in this that would lawyer for you that have other intentions than actually doing what's right for you. But see, people that can't wrap their mind around the possibility of such corruption are children. Right? Because, you know, it's like arguing that conspiracy theories are, oh, yeah, because people don't gather together and conspire about how to benefit themselves at the expense of other people. That's just crazy. Think about how childish these people are. Now, it says Homeland Security Act. The Homeland Security Act of 2002 provides another exception to the exclusive jurisdiction of the vaccine court. Get this. If smallpox vaccine were to be widely administered by public health authorities in response to a terrorist or biological warfare attack, which is what they're priming us for right now, including with a little bit of smallpox in there, persons administering or producing the vaccine would be deemed federal employees, and claims would be subject to the Federal Tort Claims Act, in which case claimants would sue the U.S. government in the U.S. district courts and would have the burden of proving defendant's negligence, a much more difficult standard. Right? So they just make it much more impossible to get what you want if it has to do with smallpox. That should be something that we ask ourselves. Again, it's the same thing we're dealing with now, that because you're in so much danger, and even then it was a nebulous, undefined danger of terrorist possible attacks, they're saying, well, we're going to just remove liability and even make it harder for you to try to get back what you lost if they use this and force it down your throat. Crazy. Petitioner's burden of proof. In the vaccine court, as in civil tort cases, the burden of proof is a preponderance of evidence. built while in tort cases. Or excuse me, but while in tort cases. This is met by expert testimony establishing a rigorous scientific case. In vaccine court, the burden is met with a three-pronged test. Get this. So, of course, remember that we're talking about you self-defending yourself or using one of their lawyers and then arguing that this is how you have to defend yourself. The petitioner must present a biological theory of harm, demonstrate a logical sequence of events connecting the vaccine to the injury, and establish an appropriate time frame in which the injury occurred. The petitioner must also show that there is not another biological plausible explanation for the injury. Do you realize how wildly impossible that is? So if they give you another plausible, in their mind, biological explanation, apparently that makes this null and void. This is what corruption looks like. This is what the illusion of a process looks like. And even within that, people are still being $4.2 billion still paid out. And that's probably for the ones that they just can't hide. Horrific examples. Now it says, the ruling held that, and this is where it gets into, again, these are actually things that have come out. Rulings based on vaccines that we're not allowed to question. Vaccines that right now, if I were to literally state exactly what I'm about to read to you online, they'd probably censor it for creating vaccine hesitancy. It says the ruling held that tetanus vaccine caused a particular case of optic neuritis, which is apparently the demyelinating inflammation of the optic nerve, it says. It is also known as optic popliteus. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Anyway, it sounds bad. It says, even though no scientific evidence supported the petitioner's claim, the ruling held that they caused that. So they ruled that's the case. And that's fake news? A court's ruling that this vaccine caused this obvious neurological issue is fake news? Apparently today. Other rulings have allowed petitioners to gain awards for claims that the MMR vaccine causes fibromyalgia, that the HIV vaccine causes transverse myelitis, and that the hepatitis B vaccine causes Guillain-Barré syndrome. Oh, there's that again. Chronic, I bet you that's something that's a completely vaccine-derived issue. So many things probably are. It says chronic, the one we just listed off, I don't want to mispronounce it again, and multiple sclerosis. It says a 2006 petitioner successfully claimed that, which means he won, that a hepatitis B vaccine caused her multiple sclerosis. Do you realize that? This court, a court that's literally set up to make sure you can't win, is ruled that that vaccine caused multiple sclerosis. Again, if I were to go online right now and argue that any vaccine causes multiple sclerosis, I would be attacked mercilessly by the blue checks. I'd probably get it deleted. But it's 100% true. This is the world we find ourselves in. Please think about how that relates to what we're talking about with COVID-19. It says in 2008, the federal government settled a case brought to the vaccine court by the family of Hannah Poling, a girl who developed autistic-like symptoms after receiving a series of vaccines in a single day. Remember, the MMR one is the one discussed and vaxxed and all of that, which is obviously a problem. And it says the vaccines were given DTaP, HIV, MMR, varicella, and inactive polio, all of which have obvious examples of pretty severe side effects. Poling was diagnosed months later with encephalopathy, brain disease, caused by a mitochondrial enzyme deficit, a mitochondrial disorder. Diagnosed, right? So first of all, realize even back to that statement I just made that these things have caused severe side effects is something people would attack, but it's very easy to look up. But it says, although many parents view this ruling as confirming that vaccines cause regressive autism, most children with autism do not seem to have mitochondrial disorders, and the case was settled without proof of causation. So again, that's the argument they made right up there. So as they can pretend that there's some kind of biological difference, they can just dismiss it and move forward. But in here, there are numerous examples of straight up rulings that vaccines cause severe issues. Not just have, a rash or a little side effect, but can cause multiple sclerosis. Like, look, I want to challenge everybody right now. Everybody listening right now. Take this line right here. A 2006 petitioner successfully claimed that a hepatitis B vaccine, or even just start right here, hepatitis B vaccine caused her multiple sclerosis, right? Link to this page, put that out, share it everywhere. I would love to hear your stories of how you guys get censored. I promise you it will happen. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you will get censored for claiming that, despite the fact that it's very, very real. It's crazy. Now, this leads us to the logical conclusion of the other fake news story that's not happening, that digital passports are coming your way based on this exact thing we're talking about. You know, the already shown to be unsafe and dangerous vaccine is going to be verified by your digital health passports. Now, we just mentioned this one the last show, but I wanted to add some things that I found on Zero Hedge today. First test of new immunity passports will take place Wednesday. You know, that fake news thing that doesn't exist? Yeah, it's happening already. Oh, where'd you hear that before on this show? Right now, people will argue this is fake news. And it's taking place Wednesday. The World Economic Forum, the same supranational organization that organizes the annual forum in Davos, is taking the lead in testing a global standard to communicate that an individual hasn't been infected with COVID-19. So they tell us, right? This is all based on testing that's shown to have wildly high false positives. The project to develop an international standard to communicate whether travelers have been infected with COVID-19, called the Common Pass System, is being led by Paul Meyer, a CEO of Common Project, a Swiss nonprofit financed by the Rockefeller Foundation. Of course, with Common Pass, travelers would take a test at a certified lab. Then the results would be uploaded to their phone. And by that point, no longer private. And we all know that. Then they would complete with other health-related questionnaires. Excuse me, I think I said that wrong. Then they would complete any other health-related questionnaires required by the country to which they're traveling. Before boarding, airlines can use CP, Common Pass, to check whether travelers have met entry requirements. This can be done by simply scanning a QR code generated by the app. Simple, right? Exactly like the thing we showed you on the show about Sweden that they deleted and said was fake news. Even after the COVID-19 pandemic ends, these health passports could be used to offer evidence that a traveler has been vaccinated, not just for COVID-19, but for anything else. And even once vaccines are widely available, the world will need a system for patients to prove that they have received the vaccine. Some countries might allow travelers to enter if they have received a specific vaccine, or might only allow them. Says it's hard to do that. Speaking with The Guardian, it requires being able to access the health of incoming travelers. Yep. Hopefully, we'll soon start to see some vaccines come onto the market, but there's not going to be just one. Well, it says the first iteration of the new health passports will be put to the test on Wednesday when a small group of passengers flying from the UK to the US. Right. Keep telling yourself that Trump and the US government and the UK government, that it's not part of this, that this isn't part of the plan, that they're literally using these things across. They're collaborating on this. Passengers fly from London's Heathrow Airport to Newark on a United Airlines flight on Wednesday will be part of the first wave of test subjects. I've been telling you since Derek wrote that article that the airliners have been driving this, you know, one of the prominent voices in making sure this happens. Tests from a private testing company called Prenetics will be, by the way, somebody look into this company. I haven't had a chance to, and I want to make sure I do as well. Prenetics, probably something worth looking into, will be administered by the travel and medical services from Collinson. I'd be interested to find out what people are connected to it. And the results will be uploaded to travelers' Swiss ports. All right, so this is the reality. This is happening. And they're telling you right now that they're going to make this work, so you have to be able, and this is not just airliners. There's all kinds of businesses and entities, and I've gone over all these examples on the show. They're already telling you that this is being built, not to mention that it's already being built in with ID 2020. You know, that ID that we're all going to have. So if you can't have that ID without having your vaccine record and proving you've had the COVID-19 vaccine, that's called societal exclusion. So regardless of whether Trump forces it on you or anybody forces it on you, it'll be forced on you anyway, because you won't be able to live your life without proving that you've had it. And they'll still scream to you that it's not mandatory, though. And then remember this, just to re-add it, because we just mentioned Rothschild, that this is another example of the exact same kind of technocratic control being justified by the idea of COVID-19. And this is a method that I pointed out before that was being pushed in 2015, 16, 17, 19, and then kind of paused 2019, and then in December, and then shot back up in May. Weird that it paused in December, right, when this was beginning, and then shot back up in May, right? But it's method for testing and COVID-19, inventor Richard Rothschild, and it's testing, they say, testing. But it says a method provided for acquiring and transmitting biometric data of a user where the data is analyzed to determine whether the user is suffering from a viral infection. Well, that sounds great, right? Not really at all, but it gets worse. It says using a pulse oximeter to acquire at least pulse and oxygen, blood oxygen saturation percentage, which is transmitted wirelessly to a smartphone. An accelerometer within the smartphone is used to measure movement of the phone and you. And then it's uploaded to the cloud. Go on telling yourself that you need images of you laying in your bed, or, you know, like they need tracking of you and your phone wherever you go to make sure that they can test for your sickness. Somebody, please explain to me how that makes sense. Well, they go on to make it so because we need to make sure the phone is accurately working so we know that the test's accurate. Oh, sure. That sounds logical. Or they want to make sure that they're constantly tracking you all. And by the way, remember, this was being introduced way back when, before, under an entirely different idea. It's all, as I always say, it's all right there for you. It is all in front of you if you just care to pay attention. And I really, really hope people are beginning to pay attention. Now, I want to talk about masks before we finish off with this one last point. Just a brief points about some masks, but an interesting one. Donald Trump shared. Interview with 60 Minutes, and she's not wearing a mask. Leslie Stahl with 60 Minutes, not wearing a mask. Make sure it's muted. After her interview with Donald Trump, right? So the only reason I'm showing this is because they're forcing people to wear masks, as in, you know, the government. They're forcing you to wear your masks. They're forcing you to lock down. They're forcing you to do all these things that these people are openly not doing. People like Donald Trump as well, people like Bill Barr, people like a lot of them are openly defying the very things that Americans are being arrested violently for in many cases. So first of all, to go off of Trump's point, that's absurd. Here's a bunch of media that's trying to scare you into thinking that you have to do this, and if you don't, then you actually don't care about other people. So does Leslie Stahl not care about other people? Does Leslie Stahl think she's better than other people? That, I'm making that point because that's what the UK was telling you with those signs. Well, that if you don't do this, then you don't care about other people, right? Okay, so Trump's right in that. Trump is correct in pointing out the obvious hypocrisy here. But here's the point that supporters of Trump don't like to be made, even though it's just as logical. That why is Trump allowing this to continue as the president of the country? Why is somebody like Bill Barr, who is in charge of the Department of Justice, allowing the Department of Justice to, from a federal level anyway, to allow these things to happen while he's not doing it? This point needs to be made. Trump has the right and the obligation to stand up for your rights, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. And right now, there are Republicans that are being forced to wear masks, Republicans that are being forced to lock down, and while Trump is arguing that those things aren't necessary. So do something about it. I would support you to the end of the earth if you stood up and made all this come to an end because it's unconstitutional. But it won't happen because they're all part of it. Just stand back and pretend like he's not in control of the governors is a joke. They've never cared about states' rights up until they wanted to pass the buck. What we're seeing here is calling out something that he should be stopping. End of story. For every single person that right now gets arrested or loses some part of their rights because they're not wearing a mask when we're told we should be, is Trump is complicit in that. As is every other member of Congress and every other politician that is not standing up and stopping this unconstitutional actions. Now, again, to reiterate, I'm not suggesting that Trump should step into one of these Democratic governors and take control of the country, of the state. I'm not even suggesting that he should remove him and do what he wants. I'm suggesting that person should be told that he has to stop this because it's illegal and unconstitutional. And if they don't, then Trump will remove them and then back away and allow the people of the state to vote and create action that they want as the constituency of the state. You know, like an actual representative government. Because how much, I promise you right now that right now, just statistically, most Americans are very unhappy with what's happening. At the very least, should be allowed to make their choices for them, like Sweden. You know, that place that's completely normal and not completely destroyed and economically collapsed. And, you know, they're living their lives normal. They're not being forced to do anything. We're going to get into a couple more points next, even in regard to the lies about the mainstream media are making about them, and more so than what we just talked about. So it's deceptive and disgusting that the media that's trying to scare you into doing these things is not doing what they're being told or that they're telling you to do. But it's also bad that Trump and whoever else are pretending like he's literally doing this and going, look, 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 she's doing it. She's not doing it. And then allowing people to be arrested for not doing it. Is he not the president? Or is he just another voice on the Republican side? Right? I mean, that's what it feels like. It feels like he's just another guy on Twitter sharing his opinions instead of the guy who literally has the obligation to stand up and make this stop. Well, here's another wildly important discussion that I'm not going to play the whole thing for you. I'm just going to play the opening clip, but I really hope that you watch this. Now, we mentioned these ladies in the past. And we also, we were one of the very first people to discuss OSHA and the obvious, and the only reason is because I come from restaurant background and I'm very aware of OSHA and the way that they regulate these things. I think it's Operational Safety Hazard Association or something like that. I'm just blanking right now. It's been a long time since I've been in restaurants. But the point being is their job is to make sure that your work environment is safe. One of those things, there's a lot of industrial businesses, is masks. And remember way back in the beginning when The Last American Vagabond was talking about the reality that OSHA has it listed very clearly that these things are not meant for that purpose and so on and so on. Now, here is a couple of ladies that he brings on the show. Good for Del Bigtree, right? He's really standing out as a beacon of truth in this time. He brings them on and allows them to speak about this exact thing. Now, why would we not? Why would the people from these groups, OSHA, who is their job to discuss these kind of things like masks and efficacy and whether they should be used in certain circumstances, why would they be censored? They would only be censored in a world that doesn't care about the truth and reality, that they just want to control how you think. Now, I'm just going to play the opening clip here just to see what they were saying before, and then please take time to watch this when we're done.
Doctors aren't mask experts. They bring in what? An OSHA professional. Occupational Safety Health Administration.
Health.
Government agency that focuses on air quality and what you need to do when wearing a mask, how to wear a mask. How about one of those experts?
And remember that the other point was the reality that they know that first of all, that they below a certain, I think it was 19, below oxygen level in general is unsafe in any work environment. And that if you rate it inside of your mask, that you will have a dramatically lower than that. And they'll tell you that's unsafe.
Or how about two? That's exactly what happened, and it went viral. Maybe you remember this.
We're very familiar with the whole mask conversation. It really hits kind of near and dear to both of our hearts, which is why we're paying very close attention to all of this, and we are very concerned as environmental health and safety professionals. Let's talk about masks. All right, so what do we know about this virus to begin with? We know that this particular virus is incredibly, incredibly tiny. It is so tiny that it's between 0.06 microns and 0.125 microns. So what that means...
Now, I want to make sure we're clear on this from before that we were talking. Remember I showed you the graph in one of the last shows that it was, you know, obviously enlarged that shows you how small it is compared to like the flu and everything else. But it's important to remember, according to the experts, that in regard to transmission and the way that this thing operates, they're very similar. Doesn't mean they're the same size, but they're very similar in regard to how it works with the masks and how it transmits and so on and so on, right? That's very important to understand.
When it comes to masks and the homemade cloth masks in particular is really the hot topic that we want to address. They do literally nothing to protect you from disease transmission. Okay, so everybody talks about mask up to protect your neighbors so you don't kill grandma, all that kind of thing. This is what you're hearing from people. Well, what you need to understand from a virology perspective is that that mask is not protecting anybody around you at all. So what we're trained to do in a work environment through federal regulations, through OSHA, is not what we're seeing at the hands of our governor. We just have this blanket mask mandate. And the issue with that is we're not following any other protocols. When you just tell someone to slap on a mask, you don't know any of their medical histories. And
yep.
You don't know the conditions in which they're wearing the mask.
Yep.
And you don't understand what they may be doing. This is why we wanted to get together and talk about this, because the whole mask usage, there are so many guidelines you must follow. And these homemade masks, while I totally understand the intent is to be kind and selfless and help others, they are actually dangerous.
And realize these are experts speaking on the thing that they're experts about. And the idea that everything they're saying is completely logical. Right. How many times have we referenced the study showing you that they argue that in the study, according to the NIH, the National Library of Medicine, that up 97% of the time, even droplets get through your cloth masks. But we're fake news, right? Censor us because we're showing you the facts. I really hope you'll take the time to watch this video because Dell is really doing some excellent work. I've tried to get in touch with Dell in the past. I was sort of involved with some things in the past. Anyway, I would like to get in touch with him for those out there that might have his ear. Does some really great work. But I hope you'll watch the rest of this video in its entirety. Very important, because they go on for another 40 minutes interviewing these two about this topic. It's very important. Now, on to some other discussions. And in the same vein, we're still talking about this discussion, but this is a tweet from Spiro. You just have to listen to what these people are saying. Again, it's incredible that these are more medical professionals. Yes, they're the frontline doctors. Of course, because of politics, they've been branded some kind of fake news thing. But isn't it funny how it went from, oh, that's just like one fringe doctor online and a bunch of conspiracy theorists, to now, oh, that's just that entire medical organization, a bunch of conspiracy theorists that, really? Like, they're claiming these people are anti-science, and they're literally pointing to science. They're literally saying, here's the scientific proof of why you're wrong, and the people that are saying they're anti-science aren't doing that. As Spiro said, masks do not control a virus, masks control you, or rather, that's what she says in the video. Masks are the equivalent, and this is what she says, of George Orwell's boot on humanity's face forever. Don't take it from me, take it from a spinal surgeon and certified medical doctor of 40 years.
I'm Dr. Lee Merritt. I graduated at the University of Rochester, New York in 1980. I completed an orthopedic residency, a spine fellowship. I served 10 years as a military surgeon, and I was on a congressional committee that looked at technology for the Navy. You know, I'm a spine surgeon. I've spent 40 years of my life.
And I believe this is cut. It's not, it's edited, but it's obviously for YouTube or for Twitter, so you can only get in so much time. I do it all the time where you cut it up into certain parts, but this can easily be found on YouTube and other places right now.
Life in a mask. And I can tell you, in my entire career, nobody was talking about masks as a control mechanism for viruses. Now, I understand why they can, you know, I'm a spine surgeon. I've spent 40 years of my life in a mask. And I can tell you, in my entire career, nobody was talking about masks as a control mechanism for viruses. Life in a mask. And I can tell you, in my entire career, nobody was talking about masks as a control mechanism for viruses. And I can tell you, in my entire career, nobody was talking about masks
okay,
as a control
okay.
mechanism for viruses.
Keep going.
Now, I understand why they can convince people they work, because when you put on a mask and you sneeze, you can tell that it hangs on to those sneeze particles. Unfortunately, the problem that transmits virus are the little particles you don't see. The large particles that you catch in a mask, they're dead virus.
Did you catch that? Right? So the whole discussion about the, you know, hurting grandma, or the idea that, you know, that it's not true. And experts are speaking out all over the place against this narrative. And again, they'll show you science to back up what they're saying, which you won't see on the other side. You'll hear statements about science because they want you to believe what they say the science is, not what the actual science is.
They're even sick with anything, they're dead virus. It's the small, invisible 0.12 micron viruses that sneak out through the mask, around the mask. They're like golf balls going through a tennis net. Our masks, even the very best medical mask, cannot screen out, cannot protect you from this kind of small particle virus. The other falsehood is you spread this to people because you cough on them. Nobody coughs on each other. When's the last time you ever coughed on anybody?
When you hear this in its entirety, like, she's not, I mean, obviously it can happen. She's kind of speaking off the cuff, but she's just making a point that it doesn't happen. It's rare to be coughing directly on somebody. Just to clarify, because this is being clipped up in such a short period of time.
Really is happening is, if somebody's diseased and they have this virus, it gets into the atmosphere and the whole air fluidity is filled with little viruses. We have it around us all the time. You can't mask that away. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't options. There are treatment, as we just heard. There is also environmental mitigation. Turns out humidity is great for this. But masks don't control viruses. They control you. The biggest myth in this is that they're not damaging. You hear people say all the time, well, they may not do much, but they're not really hurting anybody. Yes, they are. Besides what they're doing to society as a whole, separating us, isolating us, think about what they're doing to our children. You know, children need to look at faces to learn how to be a human. Reading faces is part of humanity. Interacting with people. We are creating a generation of children that have an inchoate fear of things. A four-year-old doesn't understand what's going on. We are making a generation of children that are afraid of their environment. That's not a way to make a healthy generation. And this is a problem that's going to waft into the next generation. We have to stop this now. We have to take our country back. The masks may look like they're not much. They look like they're just a little soft piece of cloth over your face. What's the big deal? The big deal is that they may be soft and they may look okay, but this is George Orwell's boot on the human face forever.
Now, also, let's not forget that cloth masks verifiably increase your risk of infection, according to the NIH and the National Library of Science, or Medicine, excuse me. Right? That's what they found in their study, as well as the fact that there's multiple NIH studies that show a verifiable reduction in oxygen level in your blood, right? So there's all kinds of reasons why this is the case, but this is literally from medical experts that have spent 40 years dealing with this stuff. Now, I just want to actually quickly comment on something before I move forward, because the next one we're going to get to here is in regard to, it's the Mises Institute. Google mobility data suggests Sweden socially distanced less than other countries. Interesting. Because their argument that they, you know, they're trying to fall all over themselves now to make excuses about why Sweden is not the worst place on earth right now. But I want to comment on somebody in the chat saying that everyone around them supports Operation Warp Speed. And I don't know if you mean as well as Amazing Polly, or they support Operation Warp Speed and Amazing Polly. But in any case, this is what's so frustrating about this point of the two-party paradigm, that there are people that are so, their whole entire identity is so wrapped up with whoever they're supporting on one side or the other, that they just won't allow themselves to see the problem. Like, look, I even give people the out that because I don't want them to be pushed away by the idea that Trump might not be who they think he is. Like, argument, look, maybe Trump's being tricked, right? Maybe he is the guy you think he is, and he's just being fooled. It ultimately doesn't matter, because warp speed is wildly dangerous. It is obviously bad, and it's a military... This is a military intelligence agenda. That's what this is. And they're basically using this as cover to push in something they've been pushing for a long time. We have bio and biomedicine injectable people all across this board leading it, Moncef Salawi. Right? I mean, these people are openly adamant about injectable biosensors and technocratic future type stuff. The point is that this thing is dangerous. And in every possible way, it's completely lacking transparency. There's conflicts of interest in every possible location. And all they can do is say, well, that's because they're trying to keep a secret from the Democrats or whatever. Right? And, you know, maybe you're right, but there's nothing that proves that. And we have to be skeptical. So I get you. I forget this. I don't see the name now, but I understand what it feels like to see. But just understand that you just need to get the information to these people. Don't even argue anything about Donald Trump, or maybe you even support him. And the point is just that it's about the information within Operation Warp Speed. Like, you cannot show somebody how alarming these things are and have them walk away thinking, oh, that's for the good of America, unless they just don't want to see it. That's how obvious these things are. So just keep fighting to plant the seed. You know, and this, the problem, the point is that whether you're talking about a Trump supporter, a Biden supporter, these are all people that have just been manipulated, right? These are people that just don't understand what's really going on, because they're still sucked into the two-party paradigm and thinking that if they just get this person elected, everything will be better. You know how long they've been saying that? This is the most important election of your lifetime. They say it every single time. And yet we still buy into it. It's pretty ridiculous. But this point shows us how dishonest they are across the board. Now, remember, too, by the way, that even Trump supporters have been getting upset with, like, Fox News, and because they're pushing the vaccine and so on, up until the vaccine became a good thing because Trump said it was good and, you know, whatever. But it's media. I mean, all of them. And it's not that changed. It didn't change with COVID-19. You just suddenly started seeing it because COVID-19. They're all Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they're all the same thing. They're just deceiving you from different points. And so what all of them are trying to do is suggest that, you know, Sweden was a disaster. New York Times literally called it a disaster, while people are, you know, just kind of meandering around, enjoying their day, living their lives. This is Sweden right now. Do you remember when your life was like that? When you were out and about, hanging around, walking that, you know, just living your life like no big deal, right? according to the mainstream media, these people are a disaster. Now, I'm going to make these points again in a minute, but remember this picture. Now, also remember how this is kind of crazy. They're talking about Google mobility data. So literally, we're tracking everybody. And because of that, we can tell that these people weren't actually distancing. Isn't that a little alarming? Yeah, it really is. But we're so far past that idea that that's just almost acceptable that, yeah, we all know that. We all know Google's tracking us all the time everywhere. And it's for your safety, though. Blah, blah, blah. But what's funny is that's like the lesser part of the story, but it's incredible. It says, what is rarely mentioned, however, is that Sweden's deaths per million are also similar to or lower than many countries that did impose harsh lockdowns. I mean, I've shown you this here numerous times. I'm going to show it again in a minute. But here's their deaths per million, right in line with every other time. Pretty interesting. Now, it says they're similar or lower to other countries that did. Now, if they imposed harsh lockdowns and Sweden didn't, it should be nowhere near the same. Actually, a point that was just made with somebody I was on their show today, Manitok, I believe. And they made that same point. Excellent point. You know, that you have locations that we're in that aren't really doing any of the things we're supposed to, and yet your state across the way is catastrophically worse, and they're doing all the things we're supposed to, according to the government anyway. But it says, as of October 18th, the deaths per million in the United Kingdom were 643 in the UK for only 585 in Sweden. How could you possibly explain that? Well, they're sure as hell trying, they're basically just trying to argue that these people were doing the right thing anyway. Right? Like, that's what they're trying to argue. Like, it's just because they were so ahead of the game that they were all social distancing on their own accord. Oh, you mean like a free society and they were allowed to make their own decisions? Well, not even that argument is true because they didn't do that, according to this data. But we'll show you. It says, meanwhile, in Belgium, death rate was 897 per million and Italy's rate was 606. Deaths are apparently flattening in Sweden. Flatlining. Nothing. Sweden has reported fewer than 10 deaths in the past week. Let's check this one again. Just always good to check up on where they're at. Sweden is probably way down, so let's just search for it. Here we are. Let's see what Sweden's deaths are like. Look at that. I mean, it's basically nothing. One. Right? So explain for me how they can have the cases. Seemingly starting to go up since September 11th. That's interesting. All the way up and up and up and up in September 11th, they've had nothing. So according to what we're told, that should not be happening. And nobody in the media is trying to explain why. They're actually going out of their way to scream at you for not just blindly taking their word, but they're flatlining deaths in Sweden. They're just not there. Sweden has reported fewer than 10. Clearly, this trend calls into question the official narrative. Yes, Mises Institute, I agree, which is that any country without harsh lockdowns will experience far higher death rates than the countries that did. Except that's just not true. The theory is that the Swedes have voluntarily, this is what the media now is trying to push, and you'll probably find 15 articles about this today. The Swedes have voluntarily practiced social distancing so studiously that this explains away the apparent failure of the forced lockdown or die narrative. Right? I find it almost it's comical that in their argument, because they have no other way to go, they're actually arguing that allowing people to make their own choices was the right way to go, but only because the people in Sweden are better than everybody else because they were just so far ahead and already knew the right thing to do. It's just such a, again, intellectually dishonest. This is just a not true statement, but not the article, I mean, but the articles claiming that the Mises Institute is talking about. Now it says, as one reporter at Quartz claimed, citizens seem to be taking their responsibility seriously. Residents point out that they are practicing social distancing with the elderly isolated and families mostly staying home apart from kids in school. Really? Doesn't look like that to me. But sure, Quartz, we'll take your word for that, though. Let's keep going. And by the way, you can find endless videos like this. And if you speak to people in Sweden, as I have, you'll hear the same thing. It is all like that. They're normal. Okay, now they're telling you, though, that's not what's happening. They're all in their homes and they're all hiding. And this is only the argument they're making now that they've realized they've lost the plot in regard to arguing it's a disaster in a place that's clearly not. from day to day. You watch how they're scrambling and just reeling, trying to make this happen. Residents point out that their social distancing, isolating elderly, and staying apart in home. Right? Clearly not. The MedPage Today says Swedes in general have changed their behavior to a great extent during the pandemic, and the practice of social distancing as well as physical distancing in public places and at work has been so widespread. Clearly. Can't you tell? Can't you tell how clearly these people are social distancing and staying away from each other? It's rampant in Sweden, you know? This is Sweden, ladies and gentlemen. But it says, but again, the data doesn't show this. Thank you, Mises Institute, for having the courage to be honest. Using the Google Community Mobility Trends data, which is just so crazy to me, we find that Sweden practiced social distancing far less than countries that had strict lockdowns. So the point being is they actually did less and still have a much better situation. So it thoroughly, 100%, without question, debunks their entire narrative. Because that can't be possible with what they're trying to sell you. End of story. And this is why people like me are being censored. It says, for example, the amount of time spent at home surged 30% in the UK, Spain, and Italy during the harshest lockdowns. You know, the places that went really bad ways. It says, yet during the same period, the Swedes' amount of time spent at home never exceeded 15%. What do you know? It says the decline in workplace visits have tended to be relatively small compared to countries with stricter lockdowns. Like all of it goes the other direction. They find similar trends in recreation and retail, as well as in transit, either staying the same or actually getting better. And the end of the day is one, you're being tracked by Google all the time, and that they didn't do what the media is breathlessly trying to sell you on right now. So yet again, the media is just flat out lying to your face in order to sell you on the narrative that this place is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. Can't you tell? Can't you tell how people are suffering, how everyone's struggling, how there's people dropping dead in the streets all over the place? Just so you know, I've played a different video from Sweden every time I've done this over the last probably four different shows. Different videos each time, different locations. Go back to the beginning, you know, just it's... incredible to me. It really is incredible. Yeah, that was it on that. But so again, to make this point one more time, this is the deaths. These are the deaths. Weeks 1 to 39, January to September, same. It is on par with every other year. And then, of course, the point that even their cases, you know, the thing that they're freaking out about that aren't actually what we should be talking about because of a gigantic false positive rate? Well, even Sweden is way, way, way down below everybody else. But yeah, let's keep freaking out about all of it. Meanwhile, here's what's happening in the UK. Breaking! Greater Manchester will enter Tier 3 coronavirus restrictions, according to Boris Johnson. The Prime Minister says the lockdown will come into force on midnight on Thursday. Cool. So more lockdowns, despite the fact that this isn't really what we're being told it is. Here's Ireland's government imposing sweeping pandemic restrictions, closing non-essential stores, bars, restaurants for at least 6 weeks. And this is right after, what's her name, Cahill, I believe? Deborah, I always blank on her name, was just talking about this on a clip I just showed you, where they've reported something like 6 total deaths. And here we are. Now, that's off the cuff, by the way. Make sure you look into that. But the point is that it's dramatically lower than what we're being told. And yet they're being put on lockdowns and your lives are being controlled as they, and then guess what? More economic lockdowns will end up being more bailouts for big business, period. All based on a deception. Now, here is an article about this European country testing all its citizens. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because Slovakia is saying, well, we're going to test everybody, the whole country. And then they quietly put at the bottom, we're not sure if it'll be compulsory or not. However, it's not clear if it's getting tested as compulsory or not. We don't know whether or not we're going to force you to do this or not. It's incredible that that's even left hanging. You know, this is what they're building the world where these things are normal, where they don't need to ask your permission because everyone's in danger, right? And this is all based on the idea that these things are so serious that the and by the way, this is the same test that has an upwards of 90% false positive rate, right? So then they use that test and test everybody, and they get a gigantic false positive number, and they make it seem like, oh my God, the cases are blowing up everywhere, and then they push that into the ether, and everyone freaks out. But there are some people who are telling you the reality. At least, I guess maybe kind of quietly putting it out there that the numbers aren't really what we're being told. Check this one out.
I have a question from a colleague. Michelle Gallardo from ABC7 wants to know, earlier this week, the state reported the death of a teenager in Cook County. Are you familiar with this case? If so, is this the state's first teenage death? And can you tell us if the teenager in question had underlying conditions?
I don't have that information at my disposal at this time. I know we have had people of all age groups die. I just want to be clear in terms of the definition of people dying of COVID. So
I just want to be clear, she says, about the definition of people dying of COVID. Now get ready for this wild fake news admission coming from your government.
The case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID positive diagnosis. So that means that
at the time of death, it was a positive COVID-19 diagnosis.
If you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death.
So just to be clear, in case you can't hear that, if you were in hospice and about to die anyway, and then got tested for COVID-19, even though you were already going to die and then died from your natural causes, that would still be counted as a COVID-19 death. So not only, and by the way, this isn't new. We've talked about this in examples before. But not only are the cases totally questionable, but so are the deaths. Do you not see how this could potentially be an all-encompassing illusion? Seems that way to me.
It means that if, technically, if even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So
even if you have a clear alternate cause, as in, you know, dying in a car crash, but you had a COVID test on file, they list it as a COVID death. Think about that. And we're pretending like this is, people are controlling your lives based on these numbers.
Everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death.
She literally says that doesn't mean it was the cause of the death. That's incredible. Now, you can understand this discussion in the sense of, like, let's say there were, this caused other sicknesses and you started getting other things and you died from the pneumonia because of it. This is what they tried to make the argument in the past. I still argue that's not legitimate, but that's what they would try to argue. But we're talking about things way outside the realm here, like people dying in motorcycle accidents, right? Old people dying in homes from old age. And just because they were labeled COVID, which, by the way, is using a potentially false positive test, or even in certain cases, just simply having symptoms and being in the certain location. So, I mean, this is just so incredibly up in the air. And yet they're using these things to control your life.
They had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful.
And that was it. Staggering. What's really staggering is how much they can outright tell you what's happening. And then if we report that, we get censored because we're misleading people. That's what they keep, misleading people, because they argue our intention is to misrepresent what they're saying, even though what we said was exactly what they said. It's just sickening. Now, one other point I want to add is, because they're censoring everybody in regard to these kind of things, this is a really interesting addition to all of this. Here's the link to the New York Times article. It says in this article, actually, remember what the title is real quick. Facebook amps up its crackdown on QAnon. Now it says QAnon followers found ways to evade the rules. When I saw this, I was like, what are they saying? Like, are they really arguing that these people, that just because we thought these people were doing, like, so they stopped doing the thing that we say was why they were censored. But we know, wink, wink, that they're actually doing this in a different way with code words, but they're not actually breaking it. But because we think that that's what they mean, we're going to censor. This is exactly what I'm talking about. And you guys know my opinion about QAnon. It doesn't change the fact that this is incredible, because what they're going to argue is then people like me, let's say, are secret QAnon followers. And what we're doing is arguing these points that align with what they're saying, such as, you know, masks aren't have a statistically significant difference, except what they say is they don't work and they kill you, which is, you know, arguably not what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is more factually correct. But the point is, what they're saying is that even anybody out there that doesn't appear to be COVID or QN on people, they may be secretly, and we'll have to censor them anyway. That's what they're actually arguing here. Branched into a number of other conspiracies, they said, right? So they started talking about completely different things, but because we know secretly there are QAnon, we're going to censor them anyway. New policies likely to tighten the screws on the conspiracists. It's just incredible. Conspiracists, right? Because conspiracy is not real, despite the fact that people get charged with conspiracy in this country all the time in courts of law. But it says a New York Times article quotes, since Facebook's initial ban, QAnon followers had found ways to evade the rules. So in other words, not doing the thing that they said they were being censored for. So why are they being censored again then? If they're not doing the thing that you're saying they're being censored for? Oh, it's because you think that they mean this. Oh, I got it. It says it has branched into a number of other things. So when they start talking about another verifiable, you know, quote, conspiracy theory, like, you know, geoengineering or fluoride in the water or the NSA spying on you or any number of those fake stories, you know, that they say that, oh, well, that's also secretly part of this. By the way, I obviously know those aren't fake for somebody who might be new to the show. It says QAnon has attracted new followers by adopting tactics such as renaming groups and toning down the message to make it seem less jarring. Oh, so they aren't called a QAnon group and they aren't even talking about the things that you are censoring for. So are they even actually QAnon? Well, I guess we'll never know. It says QAnon's shifting tactics has initially helped it skirt Facebook's new rules, but that the policy announced on Tuesday were likely to tighten the screws. So now they're just going to start censoring people that they may, you know, so if I make an argument about masks and QAnon makes a similar argument, they'll censor me because I'm QAnon. That's what that's meant to do. Even though the fact that I'm making a much more logical argument using the source material and stating my case explicitly. And by the way, I'm not even arguing that there aren't people within this movement that could do the same. What I'm simply saying is they're trying to broaden this out and water it down. So just like Whitney Webb said, it can apply to us, apply to everybody. It can apply to anyone they want it to. And that's what's happening right now. It just couldn't be more clear. And it's just right in your face. And then to finish off here, an example of just the COVID clown world in which we find ourselves. Another great article from Off Guardian. Facebook labels 2 + 2 = 4 misinformation. This is fantastic. On the 5th of October, the World Health Organization's Dr. Michelle Ryan claimed about 10% of the global population has been infected with SARS-CoV-2 with an alleged death toll of roughly 1 million. That puts the infection fatality rate at roughly 0.14%. That's the case. Right? Let that sink in, right? Because that's the case. That's what they're saying. The World Health Organization, which we're not allowed to challenge, according to YouTube, is saying, based on their numbers, that this is a lot right in line with a flu. He said it. We reported it, they said. The math is not disputable. And yet, Facebook has flagged it as misinformation. So also recognize the point we made the other day. You know how the World Health Organization official came out and said that, you know, that we shouldn't be doing lockdowns like this, that the lockdowns aren't actually working the way you're using them, that this, it's actually hurting society and so on and so on. And then they attacked him. So the very people that are screaming at us to not question World Health Organization guidelines attacked the World Health Organization when they came out and said something they didn't agree with. So who's actually setting the narrative here? Is it the World Health Organization guidelines or is it the mainstream media or is it the people controlling them? Because clearly they jumped right over their own statement and attacked one of the people on the board that makes those guidelines because they're disgusting. Just hypocrisy is just dripping from every orifice of their body. They are obviously hypocrites. So now we're at the same point here, where now again we have somebody from the World Health Organization making claims, or making statements that show you this is the case, and then Facebook should be censored as an entity, right? Because clearly they're challenging the World Health Organization guidelines. No, I'm not arguing they should be censored. My point is that they're doing exactly what they tell us we're not allowed to do. Challenging the World Health Organization, which we should obviously be allowed to do. But it just shows you that the very people that are driving the censorship bus are happy to violate their own statements, their own rules, because it's not really about those things. It's about controlling the narrative. That's what it's always been about. They say this is based on an article by Health Feedback. You know, one of those completely dishonest, lying, independent fact-checker groups, which is shoddy, inaccurate, and dishonest. They lie about what Dr. Ryan said. They cynically attempt to disguise this lie. They don't understand how averages work. They ignore all the recent infection fatality rate studies. They rely on old data for infection fatality estimates. or rate. It can be rate, infection, or excuse me, infection fatality rates. Did I say it wrong? It doesn't matter. The infection fatality rate. Now, this is what's so frustrating is this is what the mainstream media is doing with their pompous hubris, where they stand up and they act like we are the correct ones. And they come out and they literally break every single rule in journalism. I should stop saying literally so much because it drives me crazy. I do that too. I'm breaking my own rules. But what they're doing is just dishonest. Right? Like, so taking, well, here's the best example to just jump right to it. Oh, it's the first one. Perfect. This is, they rely on old data for their infection fatality rate estimates. Get this. As they're fact-checking off Guardian, they actually cite a Twitter thread from February for their discussion. So a Twitter thread on about an infection fatality rate of the flu is what they cite to challenge what they're saying. And Off Guardian uses source material and studies and journals. And they're the ones that are fake? I mean, it's just pathetic. This is, they also cite the CDC's infection fatality number for COVID without mentioning that it's based on a meta-analysis from May. You'd write, like we keep saying, which has never been peer-reviewed and included modeling data rather than being based purely on seroprevalent studies. Just how embarrassing. Like, how are these people the ones that are guiding the discussion? It's because the people in power have made that the case. They ignore all the most recent studies on infection fatality rates. Literally dozens of studies have been done on exactly that of SARS-CoV-2 to this point, many of them published and peer-reviewed in just the last few weeks. The average infection fatality rate in these studies has been much lower than the 0.68%, usually about 0.1 to 0.2, exactly like we're saying. The recent studies, and by the way, I was going to show this afterward, but just remember, here's the Swiss policy research, and here are all the infection fatality rates, and by the way, they removed the World Health Organization from the top, which probably means they were pressured to do so, but it doesn't change the fact that if you look at all the other locations right here, most of them are around 0.1, but some of them are as low as 0.01, 0.001. I'm like, this is very clear that we are not where we're being told, and yet they're still locking places down. They're still forcing you to wear a mask. How do you explain that? The recent studies, health feedback site, are from June of the latest. They also never mention the immunological studies, which suggest up to 80% of people may already have immunity based on a lot of different factors, even in regard to having, the previous examples of this, which actually to me suggests that this is something that's already been here. Another way to look at it. But they don't know how averages work, right? This group is fact checking. Get this. It says the 0.14% estimate fails to account for extensive infection fatality rate variability between populations due to a different distribution of risk factors such as age, ethnicity, access to healthcare, underlying health conditions in each population, which is total nonsense. Of course, the infection fatality rate accounts for those differences. Yes, it does. These people are either wildly ignorant or are intentionally lying. Some people are more at risk from COVID than others. Some people are at almost no risk, like children. The IFR takes those differences into account and produces an average of overall chance of death. That's how averages work. But thanks, fact checkers, for continuing to prove how completely inept you are. They lie about what Dr. Ryan said because that's what they do. In the introduction of the health feedback article, the author writes, Ryan said that according to, not me, by the way, the doctor we're talking about, said that according to the World Health Organization's best estimates, the virus that causes COVID-19 could have infected up to 10% of the population. Adding later, the claim incorrectly estimates the infection fatality rate for COVID-19 because it includes recent data that assumes that 10% of the population was infected by the virus, which was the upper bound of the estimate from the World Health Organization of the global frequency of COVID-19 infections. And then a third time, the claim that COVID-19 is no more dangerous than the flu is based on a misrepresentation of, they're making the same point, but they're all lies because Dr. Ryan never, ever said that it was an upper bound. And the author of the fact check knows that because they're very carefully never quoted his actual words, you know, because that's what good journalists do. State a bunch of things about something and then never quote exactly what he said because that would clearly show that what you just said he said was not true. Good stuff. It says, in fact, they go out of their way to avoid citing exactly what he said. The only time they quote Dr. Ryan directly is when they gave him space to lie about what he said, which he did on October 12th. Again, I believe that what I said, that what I said was that many studies had demonstrated that, you know, which not true. Dr. Ryan didn't say up to 10%. He didn't say it was maximum or upper bound. And he certainly didn't say 10% or less. He said that after the fact when he was clearly pressured to pull back what he said. Our current best estimates tell us that about 10% of the global population may have been infected with the virus.
Our current best estimates tell us that about 10% of the global population may have been infected by this virus. This varies depending on country. It varies from urban to rural. It varies between different groups.
Well, there you go. Isn't that interesting? See, this is what good journalism looks like, when they actually bring it to you and say, here, you can listen to yourself and make your own decision about it. Instead of, you know, these absurd fact checkers that are just clown shoe ridiculous that are coming out and making absurd claims with nothing to verify them and then calling it journalism. They cynically attempt to disguise that lie. I might as well finish it now. Health Feedback lied, and they know they lied. More than that, they deliberately use a secondary source to try to cover up that lie. They don't link to the original article of Off Guardian, but instead link to an archived version of Zero Hedge's reblog of the article. And these are the fact checkers, ladies and gentlemen. Unlike the original, Zero Hedge does not quote Dr. Michael Ryan directly or link to the audio of him speaking. This means that Health Feedback chose to link to a source that wherever they could find it, which specifically didn't show what he actually said. That they said it, that just can't be accidental. Especially when you're trying to be a fact checker and you take a different reblog of this on a different site and then attack Health Guardian anyway. This is about as bad as it gets, guys. It's just so pathetic that these are the people that are trying to tell you that we're bad. I just can't get past it. But we know that they're driving it forward anyway, in every way. They want you to be scared. They want you to know that this is just going to get worse, despite every single indication that it's not. That it is, in fact, getting better with every single day. And in fact, possibly not even really here at all. And that's what we need to see. And they just can't let you feel that. Because if you're not afraid, well, they're not going to get to manipulate you, because they need you to be fearful to manipulate you. Rather, more specifically, they need you to be emotional to manipulate you. As the point I've made many times, just like in a relationship, we've all been there when we were younger, or maybe not, or maybe now when we're adults. But the point is that we've all been in a position where we overreact. You hear some rumor or some other variation of this idea, and you flip out, and you react, and you call people names, and you leave a mad message, and then you find out that, oh, it turns out not to be true, or it turns out I overreacted, or whatever, and you come back, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that, right? The point is that your emotions circumvented your logic, and you flipped out. You said things you didn't mean. You accuse them of stuff that you didn't even know was true about. Whatever. This is what they know. They know that your emotions will circumvent your logic. And they know that if they just get you upset, screaming about the other party and how they don't care about you, and they don't care about babies, they don't care about immigration. If they just get you doing that, they know that you won't be thinking clearly. And they drive these things in. That's literally what they do. And of course, as you can see, we have a game, even. The game, Dark Winter. It's even a game called Dark Winter. It's a trailer coming for 2020. Weird, this is social engineering, but no, it's just one coincidence. Oh, here's another one. Darkest of COVID-19 coming in weeks, right? Here's another one. Vaccine scientist, next few months may be the one of the darkest chapters in modern American history, right? We've been talking about this for a while. The idea is that the Dark Winter idea, and I hope you'll remember this article on The Last American Vagabond and look up the Dark Winter in general, the Dark Winter exercise that Whitney Webb has talked about. They're telling you what they're going to do. And right now, when we have somebody like Rick Bright, who recently said that this is going to be one of the darkest winters in history, and then we have the example of somebody like Robert Cadlec coming out and saying back years ago that this will be a very dark winter for Americans, are we going to pretend like this is all just coincidence? Or that they want you to believe that the dark winter they prepped for, that they planned for, that they've been using and trying to accomplish for a long time is going to come to pass? And they just want to seed that in your mind, that it's coming. One of the darkest. Even though the numbers aren't there, even though their information is showing you that it's going the other direction, but as long as you're scared, you're just not thinking clearly during Christmas time. So remember that point that I keep bringing up, that if you knew this was never going to end, if you knew this was going to be the rest of your life, would you still be okay with everything that's happening? I don't know how anybody could say yes to that. So a glimpse into your upcoming Christmas holiday, where you're not allowed to be around a certain amount of people, where if you sing, you have to do it under your breath or you're violating the rules, where they're literally controlling your Christmas based on things that aren't actually there.
Stole Christmas. Wait until you hear. If you thought it was bad when the Grinch stole Christmas, wait until you hear this. We are now 1 month from Thanksgiving, 2 months until Christmas, and the state of California, which of course means California's Democratic governor, Gavin Newsom, issued crazy new COVID rules that will govern your family's Christmas celebrations this year. By the way, just so we all understand the situation, hospitalizations and deaths from COVID-19 in the state of California are at the lowest numbers that we have seen in 6 months. Nonetheless, Newsom issued a dictate with what he says are, quote, mandatory requirements for all gatherings, end quote. These are the rules summarized. You are not allowed to gather with more than 3 households, including your own. So that means my parents, my husband and me, my older sister and her husband, my younger sister and her husband, my youngest sister and my brother. That's way more than 3 households. Who exactly are we supposed to exclude from our Christmas celebration? We got to chop somebody from the invite list, according to Governor Newsom.
Now think about what that means. Are we going to pretend that based on what they've already been doing, that they're not going to enforce that? That they're not going to go around on Christmas and enforce the laws, the illegal, unjust mandates that they're pushing on everybody based on numbers that aren't there? You know that's not true. We already see what they're doing. This is going to be enforced, and they're going to do so during your Christmas. Telling you that, you know, you can't hug your grandma and you can't be around enough certain family members, or you can't go out and carol because you're singing too loud. Welcome to your new normal.
Newsom says the host of the gathering is supposed to collect the names and contact information of all people for contact tracing. But how creepy. Merry Christmas. Here's your Christmas gift. But first, name, rank, and serial number for the government. Newsom then says all gatherings must be held outside. But don't worry. Newsom says you are allowed to go to the bathroom inside, but only if the bathroom is frequently sanitized.
This is not a joke, guys. This is not, she just did an excellent job about laying this out. This is not a joke. So, first of all, are they going to enforce that it's sanitized? Possibly. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't based on everything else they're doing. How about the fact that you're supposed to be, what, outside during Christmas when it's freezing outside? What about your grandma? Isn't that unsafe for her? Who cares? Because COVID-19, right? You can't be inside with the gathering. How is this even plausible? It's not, is the point, because they want you to be separate. They want you to be alone. They want you to have to rely on the government for everything and be so fearful and so upset because your world is not the same that you're willing to take whatever they bring next, which I think you know what that will be, whether it's a vaccine or some kind of control measure or some other variation of where we're going. It will be whatever they tell you you need to do to go back to the normal, which, by the way, is only this way because of their actions, not COVID-19. COVID-19 didn't destroy your economy. COVID-19 didn't destroy your job. COVID-19 didn't stop, you know, make it so you can't feed your family. That's the government that's doing that. And this is exactly what we said in the beginning. This is your, quote, solution being worse than the problem. And then you have to ask yourself whether the problem they also might have had a hand in.
You're also allowed to gather with just 3 households in an open park, but you are not allowed to jointly plan a gathering with 3 households in the park while other people you know plan a similar gathering with 3 more households also in that same park.
Oh, see, because now they're going, oh, I see what you're going to do. You're going to go, you're going to have your 3 families and then their 3 families, and you're all going to come and do it together. No, you sneaky, you can't do that, right? Like, they're even thinking that far ahead to say, well, we see how you might be able to get around this. This is just wrong. I mean, this is in so many ways, and I don't even mean wrong like illegal or wrong like a violation of your rights. This is just straight up, I can't even think of the right word for it. Like, they're sitting around and talking about how they're going to stop you from having a family Christmas. Of course, for your safety, right?
The rules are actually this specific. You can look on the California Department of Public Health website.
She's right.
Read the official language yourself. Seating for meals at these gatherings must be completely socially distanced. 6 feet in every direction for all the chairs.
Outside still, remember.
It's going to take a gigantic kitchen table. And all your food should be in single-serve disposable containers, Newsom says. You have to wear a mask with your family while celebrating Christmas, according to these guidelines. But good news, Newsom says you can briefly remove your mask while you eat, just as long as you're 6 feet away from anybody else. Also, your family party is not allowed to be longer than 2 hours because Newsom says so. Apparently, the coronavirus wants to snoop through your stockings and taste the turkey before he gets to you during hour three. Singing and music is strongly discouraged, but if you must sing, if you must play music, then Newsom says you are required to wear a mask. And I kid you not, Newsom says you should sing quietly below the volume of a normal speaking voice. These are...
It's just, I know this has become a common thing to say even before all this, you know, Orwellian or whatever else, but this might as well be the textbook definition of Orwellian. They are setting these mandates for you and how you're supposed to live your life. And if we're going to pretend for 1 second that this is not going to affect how we live our lives, or affect how children perceive their lives, and how this goes forward in the next whatever they say is happening, or the next whatever they pretend is going, I mean, any of these viruses or the flu season or whatever else they want to throw at you, it will all come back to the same point where they have to keep you safe, even though they don't even have to prove anymore that it's really what it is. Just like they've been doing with foreign policy for decades.
These are all mandatory requirements for your gatherings in the state of California as we approach the holiday season. You thought Elf on a Shelf was creepy? That elf ain't got nothing on the tyrant King Gavin.
Cheeky point, but, you know, it's funny. But it's really... Of all things, I mean, I am a huge fan of Christmas. I love Christmas because it does tend to bring out the good in people, right? You know, it really does. And I don't mean the consumerism, you know, Coca-Cola, Santa Claus version. I'm talking about the real concept of Christmas and understanding that it's all about doing for others, right? That is what I miss about this. And it seemingly that's what they want to take away from this. They want you to be afraid. They want you to be quiet. They want you to be unemotional. And that's the wrong word, because they want you to be upset and emotional, but they want you lacking empathy for other people, right? They want you lacking that human contact and what Christmas is really all about. So again, I ask the question, if you knew that this was going to go on for the rest of your life, would you still be okay with it happening? Please, take a minute and think about what that means, and think about the possibility that you could be wrong about Trump's intentions, about the safety of the vaccine, about whether masks work, about what anything, any variation of this conversation. You know what I mean? It's you just take a second and question all of it. Question everything, guys. Never been a more important time. Till we can see past the two-party illusion and realize that people like Biden and Trump are all guiding you in the same direction despite what they're trying to say around everything. Till we can realize that this is going to continue to happen and realize that in the past, that's kind of been like, yeah, well, we'll just wait for the next election. It'll just continue to happen down the road. But that's continued to happen might just be I mean, who knows? It could be much shorter than we think, because this really feels like an end game. And I've never felt that more strongly than now. So you got to do something about it. I love you all. Thank you so much for being here. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Today, the job of building this nation geographically is completed. There are no new frontiers within our borders. So, to what new horizons can we look now? Where are tomorrow's opportunities? What's ahead for you, for your children? The frontiers of the future are not on any map. They are in the test tubes and laboratories of the great industries.
The Jacobardi case was one of the great judicial moments in world history, and the public was totally unaware it was actually happening as the process was being engaged. General Electric and Professor Jacobardi went to the patent office with a little microbe that eats up oil spills. They said they had modified this microbe in the laboratory, and therefore it was an invention. The patent office, the U.S. government, took a look at this, quote, invention, and they said, no way. The patent statutes don't cover living things. This is not an invention. Turned down. Then General Electric and Dr. Jacobardi appealed to the U.S. Customs Court of Appeal. And to everyone's surprise, by a 3-2 decision, they overrode the patent office. We bring good things to life. And they said, this microbe looks more like a detergent or a reagent than a horse or a honeybee. I laughed because they didn't understand basic biology. It looked like a chemical to them. Had it had an antenna or eyes or wings or legs, it would never have crossed their table and been patented. Then the patent office appealed. And what the public should realize now is the patent office was very clear that you can't patent life. My organization provided the main amicus curiae brief. If you allow the patent on this microbe, we argued, it means that without any congressional guidance or public discussion, corporations will own the blueprints of life. When they made the decision, we lost by 5-4, and Chief Justice Warren Burger said, sure, some of these are big issues, but we think this is a small decision. 7 years later, the U.S. Patent Office issued a one-sentence decree. You can patent anything in the world that's alive except a full-birth human being.